You're listening to another top-rated radio show on the USA Talk Radio Network.
Welcome to the American Hour with your host, Commander Tom Garcia, on the USA Talk Radio Network.
Good evening, everybody. This is Commander Tom Garcia, and thank you for tuning in. We had a great show last night with Nick Taxia of The Progressive filling in for me. I was on the road. I was actually down in Mexico City, and tomorrow night I'm going to be in Montego Bay, Jamaica, man. I will be broadcasting tomorrow night because we are so close to the election. I have got to just keep broadcasting every night up until the election. The problem is I don't know if I will have internet access. So tune in, check it out, see what we're doing. I looked on the internet. I haven't been to Montego Bay in years. I haven't laid over there in years. And I would guarantee you that I'd be broadcasting. But I don't know if the hotel has internet access because its website doesn't say so. If it does, I will be broadcasting. So I'll post something on Facebook tomorrow as soon as I get there. I won't be able to do it on the website because I can't access the website once I'm out of town, out of the country. But check out Facebook. And if you're not on Facebook, well, you need to get on Facebook. I'm sorry. And also Twitter. I'll put it out on both. But I'll put it out on Facebook. If you're a member of Facebook, you have a Facebook page, go to the American Hour Radio Show. Just do a search for that and you'll find us. On Twitter, it's The American Hour. Got over 11,000 followers on Twitter. So please join them. And I tell you, Twitter is not like Facebook. It's not the same kind of thing. It's really a great way to get quick, concise information. I have a select group of conservatives that I follow on Twitter, and I want to find out what the latest is. I've been out of the country. I've been out of town. I haven't had time. I've been flying all day long. I don't have time to look at the mainstream media and the conservative media, et cetera. I go to my core conservatives on Twitter and find out exactly what's going on right now and get the information very, very quickly. So Twitter's a great place to have an account. It's free. It's very simple. And you don't really have to be engaged. It's not like Facebook. You don't have to. You can just get an account and then find some true conservatives on there. In fact, if you want to, you can actually go to my Twitter account, The American Hour, and find out who I'm following. You can also see who my lists are and follow the same exact people that I'm following as well as The American Hour, and you will get the best of the best. I guarantee it. So get an account on Twitter. But in any case, tomorrow I will be broadcasting out there as soon as I get there. I'm going to get there before noon and then have the whole day. So I got plenty of time to get ready for the show tomorrow night, as long as I have internet access. The last time I laid over in Montego Bay, years ago, I can't even tell you how many years, the hotel didn't have internet. If I wanted to get on the internet, I had to walk across the street to an internet cafe. Yeah, so I'm not going to be doing that kind of broadcasting now. But hopefully there is some internet, so check it out. And if not, I will be back, let's see, tomorrow's Friday, Saturday. Too late on Saturday I get back. I'll do a broadcast on Sunday and Monday and Tuesday, the day of the election, okay, because this is just very, very important. We got a lot of things to talk about tonight. I'm going to keep it pretty short, though. We're not going to do a full hour because I know everybody's got a lot going on, and if you're downloading this, which is the majority of our listeners, because it's very convenient, we get thousands and thousands of downloads every week on the USA Talk Radio Network, and that's great. We appreciate it because we know your time is valuable. There's so many ways to download this. You go to my page on USA Talk Radio Network, TomGarcia.com. Just type that in, TomGarcia.com. Of course, if you're listening to this, you've already found it. Michael Cutler, he's fantastic. I filled in for him last week, last Friday. He'll be back on the air tomorrow night. In fact, I'm going to call in. If I've got internet, I take it back now. I just forgot what I was going to do. If I have internet access tomorrow at 7 p.m. Eastern, same time as this show, I will be calling into the Michael Cutler Show tomorrow night. I'm not going to try and broadcast at the same time as Michael Cutler. I'm going to call into his show tomorrow night, and I'm going to spend as much time as he'll give me. We're going to talk about all kinds of issues. Tomorrow night, Michael Cutler's show. I may not be able to call in if I don't have internet access, but you certainly can listen in because Michael Cutler will be broadcasting live from New York. Yes, New York. That's where he lives. Tomorrow night, so don't miss that. All right, so we've got a lot of things to talk about tonight. One of the things I wanted to start off talking about is Obamacare. Believe it or not, yes, Obamacare. If you live below the poverty level, you still have to buy Obamacare. You still have to buy insurance. Now, it's going to be highly subsidized. So let's say, for example, you only make $10,000. We'll call the poverty level, which is around $27,000 a year. Just what it is, $27,000 a year. Say you're only making $10,000. You still have to buy insurance under Obamacare. There's no freebies here. You don't get freebies. You know who gets freebies? If you're in prison, you get free health care. Well, they already do get free health care. I mean, there's nothing new about that. So those people are taken care of. Of course, the military are taken care of. Well, to some degree so far, that's starting to change. But that's a whole other show I'm going to do on down the road. But what we're doing to our military, my gosh, it's despicable. But anyway, if you live below the poverty level, let's say you only make $10,000 a year, you still have to buy health care. Now, what's it going to cost you? Well, it's only going to cost you $250, and the entire rest of, guess what, the minimum amount to have the government-regulated minimum value of health care insurance is $12,000. Well, you can't afford that when you only make $10,000 a whole year. Of course not. So your cost is $250. And now you and the rest of the taxpaying world will subsidize the rest of you all the way up to $12,000. Well, that's how Obamacare works. But guess what? Let's just say you don't want to pay the $250. Guess what you will be forced to pay on your tax form? And although at $10,000, you don't actually have to file. But guess what? You earn $10,000, you still will now have to file a form so that you can say that you didn't purchase health care. And guess what you have to pay now as a penalty? $200. How many people do you think making $10,000 a year and they're $17,000 below the poverty level are going to say, yeah, I'll spend $250 to get health care, or I'll just pay $200 to get the same health care? Well, and guess what? Now just project that all the way up through the middle class. The same thing is going to happen. By the time you get up to $103,000, where the subsidies end, from $103,000 up to $153,000, you now, the percentage that you would have to pay actually is higher than the cap of $12,000. So now you are not under the mandate. So anybody from $103,000 to about $153,000 doesn't have to purchase health care. They're not required, because purchasing health care at the percentage rate of your income exceeds the mandatory amount. Guess what? You don't have to purchase it either. So we've got these blocks of people below the poverty level, from about $103,000 to about $153,000. Don't have to purchase it. And they'll just have to pay the penalty. Now, what would the penalty be for somebody making $103,000, or let's say $153,000? Well, 2% of their income. 2%. So what's 2% of $100,000? $2,000. So let's see. If you're making $100,000 combined income between you and your wife, and you got two kids, so a family of four, typical family of four, you could spend $12,000 on insurance, or you could pay the IRS $2,000, and the government will pick up the rest of the tab. Once you pay your penalty, you're now covered, and the government will pick up the rest of your tab, and you have health care. Well, why would anybody spend $12,000? Until you get to the income range where 12, where your 2% of your income is greater than $12,000, nobody who doesn't have employer-covered insurance is going to buy it. There's no need to. Now, let's talk about employers. Employers have the same kind of disincentives to provide insurance. I can tell you right now that my employer, now we're negotiating contracts, so it's going to change probably, but right now, my employer provided insurance is about $14,500. That's what my employer pays. I still pay a few hundred dollars a month in addition to that. So you're talking, you know, another, $100 a month, $1,000, $2,000. You're talking another couple of thousand. So you're talking about $16,500. That is what the Obama administration considers a Cadillac plan. Oh, I'm driving around a Cadillac, folks. Yeah, I'm driving a big, fat, gas-guzzling Cadillac. I'm going to get penalized for having a Cadillac plan. On top of, even though my employer's paying for it, and I'm paying for it, now I'm going to have to pay a penalty just to have this plan, and my employer's going to pay a penalty. So guess what my employer's going to do? Drop my coverage once Obamacare fully kicks in 2016. That means I will then have to go buy an insurance plan. I will be required. Now, what do you think I'm going to do? You think I'm going to buy the minimum required plan by the government for $12,000 a year or pay 2% of my income? I'm not going to tell you what that 2% is, but I'll tell you right now, as an airline pilot, an airline captain, still significantly less than $12,000. Okay, somewhere in the range of about half of that. Why would I spend $12,000 for government-provided insurance when I could just pay the penalty and have people who are still buying insurance pick up the tab for me? Why not? So do you see where this is going between employers and actual people? More and more people are going to default to the so-called penalty, which Justice Roberts calls, it's just simply a tax. Oh, it's just a tax. Well, you got a choice. You can buy insurance or you can pay a tax. That's not how the Constitution works, Justice Roberts. I mean, I thought the guy was a pretty smart guy. Congress has the authority to tax us. That means you're paying a tax. There's nothing in the Constitution about whether you have a choice to pay a tax or not. The Congress can give you choices. They either tax you or they don't. But now we have a choice. Go buy something or pay a tax. What an absolute violation of the Constitution. What an absolute turd he turned out to be. I mean, what an absolute freaking turd. Yeah, I said it, turd. I'd say a lot of other things because you guys know I was in the Navy. You can imagine what my vocabulary sounds like at times. So what happens is the folks that are not actually purchasing insurance and just paying the penalty and then letting others subsidize it, that number of people grows and grows and grows rapidly. So what happens to insurance premiums for the folks that are actually purchasing insurance? It grows and grows and grows. And as it grows and grows and grows, more people drop out of the insurance system. And guess where we end up? In a European system where everybody's covered by the government. Except there's still not enough money to cover it all, which means we either have to raise income taxes significantly or sales taxes significantly or corporate taxes significantly, which corporations do not pay any taxes. We all pay their taxes. They just pass them on to us. So our cost of living goes significantly up, except it'll still never cover everything. Look at Canada, look at Europe, and now the rationing begins. If you think there's going to be rationing in just a couple of years, wait till about 5-6 years down the road when everybody's on government health care. The rationing will be massive. That's the legacy we have to pass on to our kids. So there you have it, Obamacare in a nutshell. You and I are screwed unless we get rid of it, and that is all the more reason to get rid of Obama. We have got to get rid of Obamacare. It doesn't solve the problem. I'm not ever suggesting that there's not a issue with health care in our country. We have the best health care, and there are plenty of ways to reduce that. Go look up on Amazon a book by a good friend of mine, Dr. James DeJerome, The Cure for the American Healthcare Malady. It outlines the first half of the book exactly what's wrong with government-run healthcare. And he goes all over the world to show you all of the problems. And then he lays out the way that we can solve those problems here in the U.S. and not fall in the same traps that all these other socialist countries have fallen into. I've spent hours discussing these issues with Dr. DeJerome, and I don't agree with him on every single point, but for the most part, yes, he's got it right. So go check it out, Amazon.com, The Cure for the American Healthcare Malady, Dr. James DeJerome, and his name is spelled D-E-G-E-R-O-M-E. And by the way, he's Italian, and his family, he's got family that live in, guess what, the surrounding area of Sigonella, Italy. And what is that? Why is that important, Sigonella? Oh, we have a naval base there. And who do we have at that naval base? Not only military, but anti-terrorist group that can respond into the Middle East. And guess what? Only 450 miles away from Benghazi, Libya. Could have been there in a heartbeat. I guarantee it. I'm not a retired naval commander, fighter pilot for nothing. I can tell you, you can get them there, you can get them there fast. You don't have to get them there on helicopters. There are other ways to get them there, and you can get them there fast. And you got drones, you got fighter aircraft, you got all kinds of aircraft that you can get into the area. This administration has violated the Constitution in so many ways, and this is the most despicable way. We have been running weapons, heavy weapons, guns, you name it, through Libya because, hey, they're our friends now, and we have cover. And guess what? There was an article today that I saw about how an Al-Qaeda senior operative was in charge of city, municipal, and consulate security in Tripoli. Yes, and this administration agreed to Libya's request to have the people they want to have guarding our embassy in Tripoli, and one of the guy that was in charge of that is a senior Al-Qaeda operative. This is what this administration is willing to do, to be friends with the Islamic extremists. We're just going to be friends. We're going to make friends with them. Everything's A-OK because everybody loves Obama. He's just the nicest guy. And guess what? Now you get skewered. All right, so let's talk about an article here. Kimberly Strassel. We're going to come back to Benghazi, believe me. I'm not leaving that alone. Absolutely not. Kimberly Strassel. For a little lighter side of things. And then I'm going to have an even lighter side of things. A case of Obamnesia. Now, remember he was talking about Romnesia? Oh, Romney's a flip-flopper. Flip-flopper, flip-flopper, flip-flopper. Well, let's talk about Obama and his flip-flops. I happen to be a proponent of single-payer universal health care. That's what he said in June 2003 as a state senator. But in August of 2009, he said, I have not said that I was a single-payer supporter. So he's saying, this isn't a flip-flop, this is a lie. He says, I have not said that I was a single-payer supporter. But in 2003, he said exactly that. Quote, I happen to be a proponent of a single-payer universal health care program. Okay, so not flip-flopper, just liar. All right, next. In 2006, Senator Barack Obama, leadership means that the buck stops here. I therefore intend to oppose the effort to increase America's debt limit. 2011, July specifically, it is not acceptable for us to not raise the debt ceiling and allow the U.S. government to default. Wow, that's a flip-flop. How about 1996? I favor legalizing same-sex marriages. Oh, but in 2008, I believe marriage is between a man and a woman, and I am not in favor of gay marriage. 2012, it's important for me to go ahead and affirm that I think same-sex couples should be able to get married. Now, the left, the criminal left and the libtards on the left will tell you, oh, but he's evolved. Well, then, can Romney evolve? No, he's a flip-flopper, a liar. If you are a libtard Democrat Marxist, you can evolve. But if you're a conservative constitutionalist, you cannot evolve. You can only flip-flop and lie. All right. How about next? In 2011, we have an idea for the trigger, sequestration. That was the Obama Office of Management and Budget Director, Jack Lew. He said, we have an idea for the trigger, sequestration. In 2012, first of all, the sequester is not something that I've proposed. It's something that Congress proposed. Congress did not propose it. It was dumped on Congress, and they went along with it. Foolishly, they went along with it. The president and his management and budget director, Jack Lew, they came up with it in 2011. 2012, now he says, hey, I had nothing to do with that. Well, I don't know. Is that a flip-flop or is that just an outright lie? I'd call that both, but mostly a lie. How about in 2007? If I am the Democratic nominee, I will aggressively pursue an agreement with the Republican nominee to preserve a publicly financed general election. 2008, we made the decision not to participate in the public financing system for the general election because suddenly he was raising a lot of money. I mean, an unknown guy thinks, hey, let's just use publicly financed campaign. Then he starts rocketing up to the top. Guess what? Yeah, let's just go with whatever money we earn. Yeah, nice one. 2008, Senator Obama. I will never question the patriotism of others in this campaign. But then that was June. By July of 2008, the way Bush has done it over the last 8 years is he added $4 trillion by his lonesome. So we now have over $9 trillion in debt that we're going to have to pay back. That's irresponsible, unpatriotic. Oh, wait a minute. That was over an eight-year period he added $4 trillion. Yeah, and I don't like it either. How much has this president added in 4 years? Not 8 years, 4 years. $5 trillion. Wow. That's unpatriotic to add $4 trillion. But you know what? If you add $5 trillion in debt in just 4 years and half the time of George Bush, now that's patriotic. Patriotism. In 2012, I don't remember what the number was precisely. All in all, I don't know that. But we don't have to worry about it in the short term. President Obama, September 2012, on the debt figure when he took office, $10 trillion and whether to worry about today's $16 trillion. So when he got questioned on it in a debate, I don't remember what the number was precisely. I don't know numbers. Hey, I don't, you know, I didn't do math very well after the seventh grade, blah-bitty-blah, you know. But back when he was running for office and a senator in July 8th, oh, he knew the numbers exactly. Oh, and it's unpatriotic what Bush did. Yeah, he knew the numbers well then. Now it's like, I don't know, but, you know, it's no big deal. 2008, what do you say about Hillary Clinton? That if the government does not force taxpayers to buy health, then we will penalize them in some fashion. I disagree with that. Oh, boy. But in 2009, I am open to a system where every American bears responsibility for owning health insurance. Now, that is a flip-flop. How about in 2009? In France, yeah, let alone in our own country, but over in France. Instead of celebrating your dynamic union and seeking to partner with you to meet common challenges, there have been times when America has shown arrogance and been dismissive, even derisive. What did he say in 2009 in Trinidad? We have at times been disengaged, and at times we sought to dictate our terms. Now, what did he say in 2012? Nothing Governor Romney just said is true, starting with the notion of me apologizing. Now, that's not a flip-flop. That's just an outright lie. Liar, liar, liar. Now, I want to get back to a lie that he told in 2007, and I don't know if it's in this little list that I have. No, it's not. When he was talking, you've seen the audio tape. It came out about a week or so ago. you're talking to a mostly black group of folks. And he talked about the Stafford Act and said that it was waived in a couple other situations. But when it came to Hurricane Katrina in New Orleans, it wasn't. And he intimated that it was because of racism, because of white legislators not caring about blacks, the mostly black population down in New Orleans. What he didn't tell them was 2 weeks earlier there was a vote, and the Stafford Act actually did pass, waiving the requirements for the local communities to have to pony up just 10%, but 10% of what the feds were going to pay to help cover the cost. He didn't tell them that the combined monies going to Katrina, to New Orleans, was the equivalent of both a hurricane in Florida and a hurricane in New York, Irene, what was that, hit up in the Northeast. I'm sorry, no, it wasn't that one. I don't even remember which two they were, but the two hurricanes that he, or incidents that he referred to, the money was more than double that went to New Orleans because of Katrina. He doesn't tell them that. And what he definitely doesn't tell them is one of 14 senators that voted against waiving the Stafford Act, which he said was essentially a racist conspiracy against the blacks in New Orleans. One of 14 senators that voted against waiving the Stafford Act was him. He voted against waiving the Stafford Act. And he has the gall to stand there and claim that the government didn't waive the Stafford Act because of its racism, when in fact he's the one senator and the one and only so-called black senator that did vote against it. He is a liar. A liar. That's not even a flip-flop. It's outright lying. Okay, so that wasn't on my list, but there you have it. He lied in that audio tape. The audio tape shows him talking in an Ebonics kind of a language. He never lived in a black neighborhood, so he's faking it. And he's totally pandering to this audience of Americans of African heritage. And then he lies, outright lies. And 2 weeks earlier, he's on record voting against the very act that he said racists voted against, when in fact, the vast majority of senators voted for. He was the only one, the only black senator who voted against it, and only one of 14. Outright lie. So, 2008. Problem with a spending freeze is you're using a hatchet where you need a scalpel. I disagreed with that back in 2008. No, you don't need a hatchet. You don't need a scalpel. You need a chainsaw. Okay. But how about in 2010? What did he say? Starting in 2011, we are prepared to freeze government spending for 3 years. What happened to the scalpel? I don't know. No more scalpel. How about in 2008? So if somebody wants to build a coal-fired plant, they can. It's just that it will bankrupt them. 2008, August. Now is the time to end this addiction and to understand that drilling is a stopgap measure. Oh, wow. It's a stopgap measure. Oh, how about solar panels? No, that's a long-term solution. Not 2012. Here's what I've done since I've been president. We've increased oil production to the highest levels in 16 years. Natural gas production is the highest it's been in decades. We've seen increases in coal production and coal employment. What he just said, got to stop it. How is it that it could possibly be true what he just said in October 2012? Because all of this is going on private land. It has been stifled. If we want to just talk about what's going on in federal land, then it's all gone down. Oil, coal, and gas production is down on federal land. If it weren't for private investment and private land, there would be an extreme energy shortage in the United States of America today. And finally, in 2009, if I don't have this done in 3 years, then there's going to be a one-term proposition. Talking about the economy. Well, I can tell you right now, it's going to be a one-term proposition. In 2012, We've got a long way to go. We've come too far to turn back now, and that's why I'm running for president. Oh, nice. Very good. Very, very good. Well, let's talk about Benghazi. What's really going on in Benghazi? And in fact, I've got to go. I've got so many articles on this. How about that facility? American Thinker, who wrote this one? Bob Owens on American Thinker. This came out today. Retired State Department Foreign Service officer said, and this was on a, another article. It's linked to on this site, this article by Bob Owens today. Our Benghazi facility was a half-baked operation. It was not a consulate. It was a facility with an ambiguous purpose, at least as far as the unclassified world is concerned. It wasn't a consulate. So let me explain to you what was going on. First of all, let's talk about the first distress message that was sent out by our CIA operatives that were in Benghazi that did not stand down and went and rescued people from the so-called consulate. The ambassador was already gone at that point. They got back to the main CIA facility and sent out an immediate message to the embassy in Tripoli saying, we're under an attack. This is a terrorist-coordinated attack. We need help. Send reinforcements. We need the military. We're targeting the bad guys. Send help. I spent 22 years in the Navy, and I understand a little bit about the flash message system, and there are different priorities. Some of them are very immediate, depending on what happens. Just to give an example, in a squadron, if we crash an airplane out at sea, there would be like a 60-minute, period to get a message out. If we crash an airplane and whoever was flying the airplane also probably died, then the time frame comes down. If you crash an airplane into a civilian population and probably have killed some civilians as well, as soon as the duty officer finds out about it, he's got 5 minutes to send out a message that goes all the way up, and it's instantaneous. This was in the 80s. It's instantaneous. Think of a text message. It's faster than a text message. It's instantaneous, and it goes all the way up through the chain of command. And within minutes, it's at the level of the Joint Chiefs, Secretary of Defense, and the White House. Within minutes. Now, an incident like this, with an ambassador missing, a so-called consulate under attack, a message would have been sent to the White House Situation Room, where there's always somebody monitoring, Secretary of Defense, Secretary of State, as well as upper echelon of the military, literally instantly. And they would have 5 minutes to do that. Now, the folks that are receiving those messages, you don't have generals and Hillary Clinton and Leon Panetta just sitting there waiting for messages to come in. No. They're wherever they are. They might be in a meeting, et cetera. You remember when 9/11 occurred? Within minutes, somebody was interrupting George Bush, whispering to him, while he was telling a story to children in a classroom. You have a responsibility and a requirement and a legality as somebody who receives that message in a communication center to get the message to the person that is up your chain of command within a certain time period. So I don't know exactly precisely what the time period was. I would guess it would be something in the range of 10, maybe 15 minutes. The president would have to be notified, And if he wasn't in that chain, it would be the Secretary of Defense and the Secretary of State would be notified within 5 minutes of Tripoli getting that message. They would have 5 minutes to get the message out. And whoever receives that message in the State Department or Defense Department would have literally 10 minutes to notify their superior, their immediate superior, who would be Secretary of Defense, Secretary of State. And then the Secretary of State and or Secretary of Defense would have, say, 10 minutes, 15 minutes to notify the president and get a response. So I guarantee you, within 30 minutes or less, probably in the 20-minute time range, the president would absolutely have to be notified. There is no ifs, ands, or buts. Anybody in the chain doesn't sit there and hem and haw. There are actual standard operating procedures, SOP procedures, that require you to notify within X amount of time, and it's very, very short amount of time. They must be notified. So what transpired over the next 7 hours, the president absolutely knew about. So the only way that nothing occurred is because the president gave orders to somebody, whoever it was, I'm not going to speculate, that it's your ball or just stand down, let it play out, whatever it was. He gave an order. He had to have given order within 20 minutes. There's just absolutely no way, unless this president has a standing order that once I retire for the evening, and that would have been at what, like 5 o'clock in the afternoon, you do not bother me for anything unless there's a nuclear war. Then they'd be left to their own. Then they would just be sitting there like, oh, we can't make a decision. We can't. I guarantee you that's not the case. But that would be the only scenario. So this president knew, and he gave orders that basically let the whole situation ride when we had all kinds of assets and capability to assist those valiant warriors in saving their lives. And he either couldn't make a decision or wouldn't make a decision or did make a decision not to. And that is the problem. So that's how the message system works. Okay? Why would he possibly want to cover up what was going on, what the attack was, et cetera? And why would, now knowing how this message system works, and he would know precisely what was going on within 20 minutes, why would he try and attribute this whole issue to a video for over 2 weeks? Why? Well, we now know. There was no consulate in Benghazi. It was a CIA operation that was running weapons from the U.S. through Libya, because they're our friends now. They're our friends. Kumbaya, arms around each other. And we want to help our brethren in Syria who are going through what they just went through. We want to help them. So the Libyans are more than compliant. Yes, we want to help our Syrian Arab brothers. Let's go to work. So we're going to funnel all kinds of weapons and equipment through Libya, then to other countries, including Egypt, Turkey, Jordan, just to name a few. There were other countries. Ultimately getting to Syrian rebel fighters. Now, you may say, hey, well, that's all good. It may be good. But what authorization does the president have to do that? No congressional authorization, and that's what it takes. He's violated the Constitution. He's violated his oath of office. He's violated federal law. And he has been running an operation, not unlike Fast and Furious, but on a much larger scale. Yes, to possibly help a good cause. We don't actually absolutely know that it's a great cause. The jury's still out on the Muslim Brotherhood in Egypt and Libya, which is obviously completely unstable. And now we have, from Catherine Herridge on Fox News tonight, that the security officer or somebody in the compound in Benghazi, we can't call it a consulate anymore because it was not an official consulate, was concerned about security because the police chief, the local police chief that was in charge of overall security of this compound, was observed casing the joint, casing the place, not just ensuring safety, but observed engaged in suspect activity. And that message was sent to the State Department, and it was not acted upon. And that's just another example of them saying, we're concerned here. We also know that there's a cable that said there are Al-Qaeda training groups here locally, And if they decide to attack us, a coordinated attack cannot be repelled. That was ignored. All of this information is coming out. This administration has lied to the American people and endangered U.S. diplomats, CIA agents, U.S. citizens, and have then tried to cover it up. And why? What is the ultimate reason? Because we have been illegally running weapons and guns to Syria through Libya. That's the bottom line. That is absolutely it. So I tell you what, if President Obama is somehow miraculously elected, absolutely, we'll talk about the polls in a second. I've got all the info you want to know on the polls. If he is somehow reelected, he's going to be impeached. This is the worst case of deceit and treason and deception of any administration in the history of our nation. He will be impeached, even if we have a Democrat Senate. But if the Republicans take the Senate, it is a 100% fact. He will be impeached. But let's just avoid all of that ugliness. Let's just boot him out of office now and get rid of him. Okay, let's talk about the polls. What are the various polling organizations doing that are saying that Obama's ahead here, he's ahead there, he's ahead in all these states? They're polling and taking the numbers and then skewing them as if the electorate turnout will be equal to 2008. Well, was the turnout equal to that in 2010? Absolutely not. That's why the Republicans took back the House. Absolutely. So why is it they would skew those results? Because those were an absolute anomaly. There were huge numbers of groups, demographic groups, that never turn out in large numbers, did turn out because we had a historic election. It's going to be the first black president. The first black president, got to turn out. So we had demographics that were turning out that normally don't turn out in large numbers. And we're using those same numbers today, which are completely unrealistic. So what's happening is, and as Dick Morris explained it, and forget Dick Morris, just me, I'm explaining it. But he explained, well, what we have are polls that are all showing Romney ahead. But then when you skew them to the demographics of 2008, suddenly it pushes Obama ahead. But if you go back and take the demographics of 2004 election cycle, 2006, 2008, and 2010, and combine them all together, all of a sudden, Romney's back in the lead significantly. This is going to be a blowout. It's not even going to be close. And I predict that Romney will win by more than 300 electoral votes. Now, the left is going to try and call foul of voter suppression. There has been no voter fraud cases in the last 10 years that have involved any official Republican organizations. All of the voter fraud cases and lawsuits and indictments and convictions have all involved Democrat organizations, whether they be official or pseudo-official. You know, you can start a PAC and an organization and a group and call yourself Democrats. You may not be funded or tied directly to the Democrat Party, but that's who you say you are. Those are the organizations like Acorn that have been convicted of voter fraud. The only convictions in 10 years have been Democrat organizations. And yet they try and say that it's voter suppression and voter fraud coming from the Republicans. Well, it's a lie. It's an outright lie. And that's why you can see their desperation. They see they're losing and it's slipping away. And that's precisely what is going on. All right, folks. Well, we've had fun tonight. There's more. There's so much more to talk about. If I have internet access tomorrow, we'll be broadcast. I'll be on the Michael Cutler Show. Don't miss the Michael Cutler Show tomorrow night, 7 p.m. And if I have internet access, I will be calling in and we'll be talking more about all of these kinds of things. Michael Cutler has a great show. So don't miss it one way or another, whether I'm there or not. Tomorrow night, 7 p.m. Eastern. Be there or be square. Thanks for being with us tonight, and we look forward to broadcasting later in the week leading up to the election. But tomorrow night, Michael Cutler's show. Go to usaradionetwork.com, usaradionetwork.com, and then click on the Michael Cutler show, and you'll be able to listen to him tomorrow night. Thanks for joining us tonight. God bless America.
Listening to the American Hour with Commander Tom Garcia on the USA Talk Radio Network.